This poem that, from which I've taken the title is a Robert Frost poem, The Road Not Taken, in which the narrator describes a choice he has to make about which road he should travel. And as many of us know, he talks about taking the road less traveled, and that has made all the difference. Many times in life, we're faced with a decision of what to do. There are many times when after we make the decision, we sit back and we reflect, should we have done it the other way? What would have happened if we had not made the choice we had? Kavyachol, Lahavdil, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had many decisions to make as he took us out of Mitzrayim and made us into his nation. It is not often that we are given an understanding, a glimpse, into the rationales, into the reasons why he made the decision. One notable exception is Kriyat Yamsuf, and that is what I would like to investigate with you today, to try and figure out why he took us the way he did, what his objectives were. The reason we're able to do it is the wording of the Pasuk, which gives us this insight, which Chazal then jump on, and which we are going to jump on Chazal to try and figure out what had to happen. One caveat as we're about to begin. While there's a discussion among scholars, what exactly was the route in which Kriyat Yamsuf took place? Did they go north through Yam HaTichon? Did they go south and either the lakes or Yamsuf? That really is going to be beyond the purview of today's discussion. One thing we need to know is that it was not mandatory for Hashem to have taken us through Yamsuf in order to arrive at Har Sinai. It's not a case of the pilgrims needing to get onto a boat, needing to get onto the Mayflower, to cross the Atlantic to get to the New World. We very easily could have been taken on a different road during the desert. Hashem very deliberately, very specifically, made a decision to lock us into the desert with water in front of us in order to bring about this event. So if you'll join me now in the beginning of these sources, we're going to start taking a look at Kriyat Yamsuf from two different perspectives, as an end and as a beginning. So the end is going to be the end of the Yitziat Mitzrayim story, and you'll recognize a lot of the psukim that are appearing on the source sheet. Yamsuf, or Yitziat Mitzrayim rather, was an educational process, not just for Bnei Israel, but for the Egyptians as well. And as we go through the psukim, we see that very clearly, very deliberately, that Hashem had a lot of teaching to do, we had a lot of learning to do. Starting with the first pasuk, Shmos Perek Hei, source number one, Moshe and Aaron are coming to Paro and telling them, God said to let the Jews go out. Paro looks at Moshe, he looks at Aaron, and he says in the highlighted pasuk, Mi Hashem, asher shma bekolol, l'shalech et b'nei Yisrael, lo yadati et Hashem, v'gam et Yisrael lo ashalech. Who on earth are you talking about? You're telling me that your God said to let b'nei Yisrael go? I know all the gods of the world. I don't know this one. Leave me alone. And this theme of who is God is going to reverberate, and every time Hashem instructs Moshe to do a makah, it's to teach Paro another aspect of who I am. It's not only that Paro doesn't know who Hashem is, Bnei Israel also are not aware of this. They've been in slavery for over 200 years. They have an idea, but they've forgotten the specifics. So when Hashem is addressing Moshe and commanding him to appear to Bnei Israel, part of what they have to learn, again, in source two, the highlighted part, V'yedatem ki ani Hashem Elokechem hamotzi etchem mitachat tziklot Mitzrayim. I'm going to do these makot, I'm going to take Bnei Israel out in order that they know who I am, that I'm the God who is taking them out of Egypt. In the next source, we're going to see the objectives are put together. And I'm starting to read from Pasuk Dalet, that Hashem is warning Moshe, Paro will not listen to you as you do all the makot, V'natati et yadi b'mitzrayim, as I do everything that I need to do. But at the end, yadu mitzrayim ki ani Hashem bintoti et yadi ha-mitzrayim v'otzeiti b'nei Israel b'tocham. I will do the makot, so not only b'nei Israel will learn who I am, but Paro and the Egyptians will as well. And we begin to see already with Makat Dam that this is happening. What happens with Makat Dam? B'zot tida, source number four, ki ani Hashem. You will know in a very general way that I am God. The general with each makah becomes more and more specific. What happens with makah tzvardeya? Pasuk vav in source number 5. Leman tida ki en ka Hashem Elokeinu. It's not this general idea of God. Now there is no one else like God anywhere that there is. Makad Kinin, in source 6, marked a new stage in what happened with the Egyptians. As we all know, with Dam and Sfardea, the Chartumim were able to mimic what was happening. It was with the third Makkah, with Makkat Kinin, that suddenly they're not able to do so, and there's a recognition, a realization, a verbalization that something else is going on here, something else is coming into play in these Makkot. And hence, in source number 6, the highlighted Pasuk, Pasuk Tekvav, Vayamru Chartumim al Paro, Etzva Elokim hi. The Chartumim have a realization, and they vocalize it, they verbalize it, Etzba Elohim. This is the finger of God. This is something a little bit different from that which we have been accustomed to. What does it mean, Etzba Elohim? Says Rashi, source number 7, Makazo ino al-yedei shafim me'et ha-makom hu. This is no longer magic. This is from Makom, this is from God. Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, takes this one step further. Source number 8. Makat Medina v'lo al-yedei she'ilu haitazo, she'ilu ba'u al-yedei makshifot av'anu hayinu osim ken. It has to be from somebody who has more power than us. Had we been able to, we would have done it. It's from God, he has more power, there's something else going on here. Abarbanel. Elishen kibnu lomar laparo, she'im haya inyan Moshe v'Aaron mitzad hashidim. If what they were doing was because of demonry, umelechet hakishuv, or magic, haya beyadam levatlo kechichach matam, they would have been able to cancel it out. Aval haya inyanam belisafek etzvelokim, but they are acknowledging that this is from God. Rotzal lomar devar hashkechi kefi hayecholet eloki, a divine power. What on earth can man do to cancel it? Paro, at this point, understands that everything that had been done until now was illusionary, was magical, or a result of Moshe's magic, not anything intrinsically powerful that his magicians had. So we have two combinations with the Abarbanel. Number one, Paro is no longer asking the Chartumim to come and take a part of it. He realizes that it's farfallen. They've already crossed to the other side. But also that there was this crossing to the side. There was a belief already in the eyes of the Chartumim. They had learned the lesson. They no longer needed to be present with everything else that is going on. Interesting to note, and just keep this in mind, that while it might have been the end of the road, according to the Abarbanel, for the Chartumim, we're talking about Etzba and we're talking about Elohim. We're going to see the Etzba transformed to a Yad, specifically at Kriyat Yamsuf. And we're going to see the Elohim transformed into the Yud Kei Vav Kei name. What's the difference between the two names? Elohim tends to refer to a general, powerful God, the dominion over nature. We tend to think of it as Midat Hadin, but it's also God's presence in the world at large. Yud Kei Vav Kei is the Shem Prati for Bnei Israel. When Abraham entered into his brit, Hashem appears to him as Yud Kei Vav Kei. It is the Midat HaRachamim, it is the vision of God, it's the position of God that has the Hashkacha Pratit on Bnei Israel. So they recognize the Etzba of Elohim, the power of Yud Kei Vav Kei nobody has quite acknowledged at this point. Going on, as we do with the next Makkah, in source number 10, we get to Arov. And here, Leman Tidat Yani Hashem Bekerav Haaretz V'Hifleti. There's going to be a division. There's going to be a separation. Something is going to happen to the Mitzrayim, and the same thing will not happen to Bnei Israel. This is the first time, by the way, that we are told that it's not happening in Goshen. There's a major debate whether all the Makkot happened to Bnei Israel or not. This one we know for sure did not. V'Zot Tidat Yani Hashem Bekerav Haaretz. It's not just a God somewhere off in the heavens. It's a God on the earth, really mashgiach, really overseeing, really helping out B'nai Israel. And this continues, source number 11. Pasuk Yudalek, Kibab Hamazot, Ani Shalecha Kol Megavotai Alibcha Ubavadecha Ubamecha Bavor Tidaki En Kamoni Bechol Haaretz. We're talking about Dever, and we have an instruction that, a warning, if you do, Hashem is about to bring this Makah, if you don't want your animals to be affected, bring them inside. And we see that the Hayireh Dvar Hashem, Me'avdei Paro, this is a highlighted part in Pasuk Chav, they begin to bring, oh, it's not highlighted on your sheet, I'm sorry, but in Pasuk Chav, Hayireh Dvar Hashem, Me'avdei Paro, those who really began to fear Hashem, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, recognizing the Hashkacha Pratit, begin to listen, they begin to bring their animals in, and not all of them die. And again, we see the lesson continuing, the separation, the minutiae are still within the realm of God. It's not just the general day-to-day, general overlooking of things. We continue with Barad. And as Barad occurs, something has finally taken place with Paro, and we're looking now at source number 12. What has happened with Paro? A recognition on his part. Chatati hapam, he says to Moshe and Aaron, Hashem hatzadik, ani vami harashayim. God is righteous, yudkei vavkei God, not just Elohim, Hashem hatzadik, I know who he is, or at least I'm acknowledging his existence. What I have done, what my people have done, is really bad. And Moshe agrees to stop the makah, l'man tida ki l'hashem ha'aretz, again continuing on the educational process. What we see then is while he's admitting that his actions are bad, it's not necessarily towards B'nai Israel that he's willing to admit that his actions are bad. That happens with the next makah, and in the next source, source 13, and we see Paro saying, Chatati l'hashem elokeichem v'lachem. That not only have I sinned against God, but I've sinned, I have behaved inappropriately with you. This is in conjunction with the Makkah of Arba. But as we all know, that's not the last Makkah. It continues through Makkah Bechorot, as the B'nai Israel leave Egypt finally in the middle of the night with all the wealth of each rhyme that they have gathered. And Hashem has to take them out, and even still, that's not going to be enough. We would have thought the 10 makot would be enough to get the lesson into them, and we see that it's not, both for Paro and for B'nai Israel. For Paro, we see in source number 14, where he finally is able to admit, not just that I am wrong, but God, there is no one like you. Mi kamocha ba'ilim Hashem, Mi kamocha ne'edar bakodesh, norati lot osef vele. Who is like you, Hashem? Who is like you in all of the heavens? Who is like you who is adorned with holiness, doing all of these miracles? There's a lot of midrashim about who said both mi kamochas, who is being quoted here. One opinion in the Mechilta, B'nai Israel say it the first time, and the nations of the world repeat it. Another one is that B'nai Israel are saying it, and the Ruach HaKodesh is repeating it. A final possibility, not a final, but the final one we're going to do right now, is that Paro is actually voicing all of these things. And while I searched for a source, there's one midrash I remember learning many, many years ago, that Paro actually said both of them. Mi kamocha ba'ilim Hashem, mi kamocha nedar pakodesh. What's the difference? Vocalization of the ha. Mi kamocha, he's about to drown. He's managing to gasp out with his last breath, literally, okay, I understand now. There's nobody like you. And as he begins to acknowledge Ribono Shel Olam, he stops drowning. Hence, the second time he utters the words, he's able to say it more clearly. Mi kamocha ba nedar bakodesh. I've not seen a source for it, but other ones that have hinted to different things like this, especially from the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. So Paro, according to this midrash, acknowledges and recognizes who Hashem is. There was no one like him. From Mi Hashem Asher Shema Bekolo in the beginning of the Makot, with every step along the way, he has now learned to appreciate, maybe a hard lesson learned, who Hashem is. What about Bnei Israel? Have they learned their lesson? As we noted at the beginning, they had a lot of learning to do as well. And yes, at Kriyat Yam Suf, we see very clearly that they learned their lesson as well. Vayosha Hashem bayom ahu et Yisrael miyad Mitzrayim. Vayar Yisrael et Mitzrayim met al Sfat Hayam. Vayar Yisrael et Hayad Hagdola. Asher asa Hashem b'Mitzrayim. Vayiru ha'am et Hashem. Vayaminu b'Hashem uveMoshe avdo. Words that are very familiar to us from reciting them daily in davening. Hashem saved Bnei Israel from the hand of Egypt. Bnei Israel see the Egyptians dead on the shore. They see the Yad HaGdolah that Hashem had done in Egypt. They fear Hashem and they believe in Moshe as the Eved Hashem. They clearly learned who Hashem is, and ostensibly they're willing to follow Moshe, to follow Hashem, to follow the Ananim, to go onward to Har Sinai to receive the Torah, to go onward from there to Eretz Yisrael, to live a life in Eretz Yisrael based on Torah Yisrael. One interesting comment by Shmuel Safrai, that there are many times that we see the word Yad in connection with the Makot. Why do we focus so much on this one, as we remember from the Seder? Because this is the only time we see that the Bnei Israel are recognizing the Yad Hashem. Hashem used his Yad throughout, but we want to see how people interpret and then understand this Yad, and that is why this pasuk becomes so important. How does it become so important? At the end of our Seder, towards the end of Magid, as we're getting ready to finally eat, we have a discussion of three Tanaim about how many Makot that were done in Mitzrayim versus how many Makot that were done at Yam Suf. And I brought a version of it from which the Haggadah took it from the Mechilta, source 17. Vaya Yisrael et Hayad HaGdolah, Mitot Hamurot, Mitot Mishunot Zo Mizo. They see the Yad HaGdolah, they see the hand of Hashem, they see the very harsh deaths, the very different deaths. Levisha Yivi Alehem Kama Mitot Bayam. There were different ways that people died, the Egyptians died in the sea. Rabbi Yossi HaGlili Omer, Minayin Shalaku HaMitrim B'Mitrayim Eser Makot, Ve'al Hayam Laku Hamishim Makot. From where do we know that the Egyptians had 10 Makot in Egypt and 50 on the shores of the Yam Suf? Ve'Mitrayim Mahu Omer, Ve'yamru HaChartumim El Paro, Etzva Elohim, Ve'gomer, etc. In Egypt, the Egyptians talk about the Etzva, the finger. Ve'al Hayam Mahu Omer, Ve'yar Yisrael Teyad HaGdolah. And here we're talking about the hand. Kama laku be'etzva, eser makot. And more me'ata, b'mitrayim laku eser makot, ve'al hayam laku hamishim makot. This should sound very familiar with all the numerology. There were 10 in Egypt, and it was only one finger. When we talk about a hand, we're going to multiply it by 5, and that's how we get to the number 50. We'll also recognize the words of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, who want to say that it wasn't just 10 in Egypt, but are going to look at the pasuk Yishlach b'ham charon af, v'zam u'mishlachat malachei ra'im. Rabbi Eliezer is going to multiply the 10 by 4 and give us 40 in Egypt. 40 times 5 will then get us 200 al Sfat Hayam. Rabbi Akiva will look at 5 different terms and multiply the original 10 makot by 5, giving us 50 in Egypt. If that was with an etzva, times 5 gives us 250 makot al Yam Suf. Either way we darshan it out, however many makot there were, there's clearly the assumption in Chazal that what was begun in Egypt reached its ultimate at Kriyat Yam Suf, this integral connection between them, that without Kriyat Yam Suf, the lesson would not have been learned. A lesson that was crucial for them to understand Mi Hashem, both for the Egyptians and for Bnei Israel as they go on in their journey. So the first path that Hashem took us for, the purpose was to bring about this realization, this culmination of everything that has happened until now. As I started off by saying, it was clearly the end. But Hashem's choice in taking us to Kriyat Yam Suf was not only the ultimate, if you want, it was the penultimate, the next to the last, before we get to Har Sinai. And it really wasn't the next to the last, there were many stops along the way. And it really, actually, becomes the beginning. And that's what I want to go back now, to re-examine Kriyat Yam Suf in light of the beginning. We're going to look at the second source of the Mechilta, source number 18, and find out what else Bnei Israel needed to gain from being at Yamsuf and seeing the Egyptians dead. Not only the stamp, the final end of what happened in Egypt, but as the beginning. And the Midrash talks about four different reasons that Bnei Israel had to witness the Mitzrayim dead of Tzfat Hayam. Vayar Yisrael et Mitzrayim et al Tzfat Hayam, mipnei arba'at dvarim ra'u Yisrael et ha-Mitzrayim metim. For four separate reasons, Bnei Israel had to witness the Egyptians dead. Number one, Kedei shelo yehu Yisrael omrim, Keshem she'alinu min hayam mitzad zeh, kach ha-Mitzrayim alu min hayam mitzad acher. So that Bnei Israel wouldn't say, well, you know what, we managed to make it to safety. Look at all of us standing on this side of the road. How do we know that the Egyptians didn't cross back and go back to safety and we still have to worry about them? The fact that they see them washed up dead on the shores of the road take away that fear. You don't have to worry about Egypt anymore. They are no longer a threat to you. Reason two. U'kedei shelo yehu omrim ha-Mitzrayim, k'shem she'avadnu bayam, kach avdu Yisrael bayam. Not so much from an Israel's point of view, but interestingly enough, for the Mitzrayim's point of view, that the Mitzrayim, in their last seconds of consciousness, they shouldn't think for a moment, oh, well, if we're dead, at least those Jews are going to be dying as well, and have some comfort in that last moment. No, they're dying, they're going to be able to see that the Bnei Israel are on the other side, they witness that in that last moment, and they don't have that comfort. Reason number three. Ukadeshi ko Yisrael et habiza shayu ha-Mitzrayim te'unim, kesef v'zahav v'avanim tovot u'margaliot. It was a bonanza. As much as the Israel were able to take from Egypt as a result of Makat Choshech, all the smalot, all the kesef, all the zahav, say the Midrashim, it was nothing compared to what they were able to gather al Tzfat Hayam. So much so that they spent the next few days gathering everything, and Moshe has to get them to travel with force. Vayasa Moshe ta'am, it will tell us, after they're leaving Yamsuf. He literally has to push them away. They're getting so many goods off the shore. So reason number three, says the Mechilta, is in order to provide the Bnei Israel with even more wealth. And number four is really my favorite. U'kedei shiyu Yisrael notnim enehem bahem, u'makirim otam, u'mochichim bahem. Bnei Israel have this inner need. It makes them seem, on the one hand, a little bit petty, but because they're really showing who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, I'm going to look at it not petty, but really Magia Lahem. You have to realize that if they have a faith in Bnei Israel, in Hashem, that for many years the Mitzrayim were taunting them, where is your God now? What's going on? You're slaves. Look at all that's happening to you. You say you have a God. You say you're Am Hashem. You say that you're Zera Abraham. Where is Elokei Abraham? Where is Elokei Yitzchak? Where is Elokei Yaakov? You've been abandoned here. Your God doesn't care about you. They might even be saying your God can't save you. Year after year, there's a taunting, there's a putting down, which might have been even worse than the physical labor that they had to endure. So what are they able to say now? They are able to look at the Egyptians and say, you're making fun of me. You don't know where my God is. In your faces, look who my God is. Zekeli ve'anvehu. This is my God, and I'm going to exalt him. Elokei Avi ve'aromamehu. This is Elokei Abraham Yitzchak Yaakov. Look at what he's doing for me, for Bnei Israel. Look at the Am that I'm about to become a part of. You made fun of me all of these years. In your faces as you are drowning. And the psukim will then quote from, the Mechilta's quoting from Tehillim and Micha psukim that helped to show that. So very clearly, there was a beginning of the journey that Bnei Israel were undertaking with Kriyat Yamsuf. There was a sense of confidence that they needed, either knowing that their enemy is no longer going to pursue them, or in knowing that they now have riches, maybe a payment for all the work that they have undergone for 200 years, or as getting ready to be Oved Hashem, they might need some resources, or again, for the psychological beatings that they had taken for all of these years, this confidence was built up as a result of Kriyat Yamsuf. But now let's look specifically at the psukim. As I mentioned earlier, This is one of the few times that we see Hashem thinking out loud, and we get a glimpse into his thought process. I'm looking now at source 19. Vayhi b'shalach paro et ha'am. V'lo nacham Elohim derech eretz plishtim, ki karohu, ki amar Elohim, pen yinachem ha'am gir'otam milchama b'shavu Mitzrayim. And it was, when Paro was sending forth the nation, he did not consider the derech eretz plishtim, which was close, because God said, lest the people regret when they see war and they return back to Egypt. There's a tendency to take a part of that pasuk and place it somewhere else. What part of the pasuk? The phrase ki karovhu. Is karovhu, ki karovhu, part of God's rationale, part of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I don't want to take them because it's so close? Or is it an explanation, gee, this road would have been better to take them because it's so close, but I have another reason to take them in another way? If you look carefully, ki karovhu really is not part of God's thought. It's not part of the quote. Ki amar Elohim follows the phrase ki karovhu and doesn't precede it. Ki karovhu really explains the derech eretz plishtim. And when we get to the Ramban, we're going to see that even more so. So is it too close and therefore we don't want to take it? Or it is close, it would have been better to take it that way, but I have another reason for taking you another route. Let's go for the Mefarshim and we'll see the different ways in which they interpret it. Ki karofu, Rashi, source number 20, v'noach lashuv be'oto haderech lemitzrayim. Notice that Rashi is linking it to God's quote. It's too close, it's too easy for them to get back to Egypt. U'midrashei Agadah yesh harbeh. And there are many midrashim, Rashi says, about it. That it's too near, the people will reconsider when they see war. The war aspect is going to be in the next Rashi. And they're going to want to run back home. Home for them still being Egypt. Birotam milchama, continuing with the Rashi. Kilgon milchamet vayered hamaleki vaknani. This is actually following the Meraglim story with the Mapilim, when the group of people proceeded to go into the land of Israel, even though they had been told they would not go in there. And we are told that they were attacked by Amalekim and Canaanim coming down from the mountain. So Rashi is quoting this and saying, Imal kol derech yashar hayu chozrim, ma'im kifum derech mu'ukam, amru nitna rosh v'nashuva mitzrayma, im holicham v'pshita alachat kama v'kama. That if Hashem took them in a crooked route, in a non-direct route, and the first time they see war, they say, let us go back home. When they sent the Meraglim and they see what's ahead of them in Eretz Yisrael and they panic, get us out of here, take us back to where we know what the deal is. If that happened now, how much more so if it would have been a direct route? Here, at least, they couldn't directly find their way back home. There was an option. Rashbam is going to elaborate a little bit on what sort of wars we're talking about. V'hi b'shalach paro ta'am, v'nitkaven ha-kadosh baruch hu, this is source 21, v'nitkaven ha-kadosh baruch hu l'haviyam l'eretz kina'an, v'lor tzach kadosh baruch hu l'hanchotam derech eretz plishtim ki karohu, derech hu l'ikanes miyad, the Eretz Canaan. He didn't want to take them through the land of the Plishtim, which would have gotten them immediately into the land of Canaan. Ulechiavo, Latorah milchamot Eretz Canaan. When they come to battle against Canaan, Yitznu Rosh Yashuvu l'Mitzrayim. They will select a new leader and return forthwith to Egypt. Kemosh asu kama pa'amin, kidichtiv halotov lanu shuv mitzrayma, nitzna rosh v'nashuva mitzrayma, zacharno tebega asher achalnu b'mitzrayim. That if they would have seen the wars too early on, they would have turned around and complained, take us back home. We remember the good food we had in Egypt. We remember the way life was. We don't want to face the war. Ramban, as they noted, is going to tell us that the ki karovhu does not describe God's rationale. It does not appear after the phrase ki amar Elohim. It comes beforehand. Also, he's going to differentiate between Plishtim and the wars that they might have seen in the Plishtim and the wars that they would see in Canaan. One other point to keep in mind as we're continuing, ironically, or maybe not ironically, Hashem had this in mind all along, he didn't take us Derech Eretz Plishtim because he didn't want us to see a war. Yet what happens to Bnei Israel less than 1 month in the way that he did take them? They had a war with Amalek. So if you're trying to prevent war, why take them in this route? And we will talk about the decisions and the differences between the different types of war. But for right now, I'll ask you to look at Source 22, the Ramban. Ki karovu benoach lashuv beltol haderech b'mitzrayim. U'midrashei Agadah yesh harveh lashon Rashi. He quotes the Rashi that it's too close and too easy to get back. V'gam hudad Rabbeinu Avraham b'Ibn Ezra ki tam b'lo nachan Elohim derech Eretz Plishtim ba'avor ki karov v'yinachamu v'yashuvu al Mitzrayim miyad. Quoting Ibn Ezra that they did not bring for you separately, that if they went this road, it would be too easy for them to get back home. Al da'ati, but my opinion, notes the Ramban, im hayu kidivrei hen, if the pasuk should be read as they are claiming, haya ki amar Elohim mukdam, then we should have started the quote from God before the phrase ki karov hu. V'yomar ha-katu v'lo nachan Elohim derech Eretz Plishtim ki amar Elohim ki karov hu peninachem ha'am. And he gives us how the pasuk should have been read, should have been listed, had it really been part of Hashem's machshava. Because it comes before the quote, this is how he wants to understand it. Aval anachon shiomar v'lo nachan Elokim derech Eretz Plishtim asher hu karov v'tov l'nachotam b'derech ahu. But God didn't consider the derech Eretz Plishtim, which was short and a good way to have taken them. Ki amar Elokim peninachen ha'am b'yorotam yelchama b'shavu mitraima. It really made the most sense, logistically, to take them the derech Eretz Plishtim. It was shorter. They would have reached their destination that much quicker. But Hashem said, no, I don't want them to see the war. I don't want them to return to Egypt. B'tamu milchama, sheyeh lahem la'avor derech Eretz Plishtim. And the war that Ramban says HaKadosh Baruch Hu was so worried about is not the war of Canaan, but the war of Plishtim. U'plishtim lo yitnum la'avor b'shalom v'yashuvu l'mitzrayim. What is the difference? In the original promise that Hashem made to Abraham, it's not clear that all the lands of the Plishti were included. And indeed, those were the lands that have given Bnei Israel trouble ad hayom hazeh. The reason to go through the Plishtim would have been to ultimately get into Eretz Canaan proper. The Plishtim would not have given them the right of way. The Plishtim would not have let them enter. The Plishtim, says the Ramban, would have met them in battle. Bnei Israel, says the Ramban, would not have been prepared for this battle just simply to give them a right to pass by. To fight the Canaan, they would have mustered the strength necessary, they would have girded their loins, they would have done whatever they could and fought against Canaan. But a war to protect just to get the right to go into the land, that wasn't enough of an impetus, that wouldn't have driven them to the brink and really made them grow. And therefore, Hashem wanted to avoid that war. Aval b'derech hamidbar, lo yiru milchama af hiotam be'eretz Sichon ve'og malchei hamori, shehi netana lahem v'rechokim hem mitzrayim be'etahi. Going through the desert, going derech hamidbar, means that they don't have to cross anybody's land. They're not going to be faced with the possibility of people refusing them, with people coming to fight against them in order not to allow them access. By the time they would have needed to cross somebody's land, it was already the land they had been promised that they were going to conquer, the land of the Amori. Notice how he's differentiating between the land of the Plishtim and the land of Canaan. And what about Milchamet Amalek that we noted? Didn't Hashem know that that war, that battle was going to happen? Why is that so different? Why was Hashem not worried about the Amalek, maybe even putting them into Amalek's way? The Ramban continues, U'milchemet Amalek v'refidim lo hayta re'uya la shuv ba'avara. Yes, it was a battle, but we differentiated the war with Amalek from the war with the Plishtim and the possible war with the Canaan is the purpose of the war. The purpose of the war with the Plishtim, as we noted, was not to allow Bnei Israel to pass through. Had they come to the point of showing themselves as a threat to the Plishtim would have chased after them until they were all gone. If they were at the point of war with Canaan, Canaan would have fought with them also in order not to allow them to enter the land. What's the difference with Amalek? As we know, Kikarcha Badera, that they came upon us. We were not a threat to them. We were not crossing their land. We were not asking for permission to pass. They came to fight us. Would it have mattered if we ran? Would they have chased after us? Yeah, they were there no matter where we went back to. They still wanted to get us. So the nature of the war with Amalek as a threat to Bnei Israel would not have dissipated had they turned back. There would have been no way out. And the Ramban continues, Ki hem lo ya'avru aleihem, we did not pass over to them. Hu shiba me'artzo v'nilcham bahem v'sanoto otam. They came to us to fight us because of their hatred of us. And if we would try to run back to Egypt, that wouldn't help. They would be there on our tails and still fighting us and chasing us. And we also didn't, it was already a twisted road and we wouldn't have known a different way. Well, Lashon Rashi v'rotam milchama kelgon milchemet haknani v'amaleki im halchu b'derech yishara hayu chozrim ma'im kshikifum derech me'ukam amru nitzna rosh v'neshuva mitraim im holicham b'pshuta alachad kama v'kama. Ramban is now quoting Rashi's source to help prove his point. It wasn't wars per se. It wasn't specific wars that would have caused them to return. It was specific wars that would have caused them. And therefore, the twisted route was a deterrent. He was trying to get them away from war X, maybe into the route of war Y, but that the Plishtim would not have been a beneficial war for Bnei Israel at that point, and therefore we need to take them on a different way. Aval halach derech midbar itam, b'Yisrael hafu acharav, yishkon ha'anan b'itam, v'yachanu sham, v'hu b'kitzei hamidbar. But they begin at this point to follow Anan. The Anan is taking them south towards Etam. That's the first stop after Sukkot, on the way to Kriyat Yamsuf, specifically to avoid the Plishtim, even though it would have made the most sense. Sforno presents a totally different reason, and another reason for the title of this shiur. Elona Chamelokim Derech Eretz Plishtim. Apo Pisha Kavanaloki Taita Loholichet Yisrael Lahar Sinai Lekabel HaTorah. Even though God's original reason or his purpose, what he's stamping on their ticket as he's handing them tickets to leave Egypt, first stop, Har Sinai, second stop, Netzav. We're going from Har Sinai directly to Eretz Yisrael. Kamru v'lach kachti etchem li laham, v'heleti etchem el ha'aretz. As the pasuk said, I'll take you to be my nation, Har Sinai. I'll bring you into my land, Eretz Canaan. Mikol makom hakavanata haita loholicham liyam suf asher lo haya derech lechad me'ela. So why on earth is he taking them to Yam Suf, which is not a direct route to Eretz Yisrael, and maybe not even a direct route to Har Sinai? V'ze l'hatbia sham et paro v'chelo. Reason number one, to drown paro. We were the mice baiting the cat. We wanted paro to follow us. Hashem wanted to do something to finally get rid of the threat of Egypt, and that had to be done at Yam Suf, so we had to draw them out after us. Al derech umashachti alecha el nachal Kishon et Sisra, in a similar manner that Barak is able to draw out Sisra with the help of Yael, and Bnei Israel are able to win the war. Hineh haderech hayashav hakatzar lelecha mimitraim liyam suf hayaderech eretz plishtim. The most direct route would have been the Derech Eretz Plishtim. Amar Shakeli Farach Loratelin Chotam Belto Haderech Kikarov, but Hashem did not want to take us on this road, it was too close. Mipnei Shahaya Oto Haderech Vesofo Karov Lemitraim. The beginning of this trade route, the end of it, was too close to Egypt. The Yerbu Ovrei Derech Sham, Umagidim misham lemitzrayim umitzrayim lesham. Too many people traveled this road. There were too many peddlers, merchants going back and forth. The merchants would have seen Bnei Israel going down the Derech Eretz Plishtim. They might have seen them stuck at some point even. And they're going to go back and tell the Egyptians, you know what? This is where Bnei Israel are at this moment. The Egyptians would have started to pursue Bnei Israel. And maybe the same merchants, maybe different ones, would have then been able to tell Bnei Israel, oh my goodness, guess who's following you? You thought you were safe. Silly you. The Egyptians are on your heels. Ki karov hu mipnei shehaya oto haderech v'sapo karov l'mitzrayim, yirbu avrei haderech u'magidim misham l'mitzrayim u'mitzrayim l'sham. Hinei be'otam milchama b'shamam shi'achim paro et atzmam lirdof achareihem kol chalom, yinachem ha'am b'li safek miyirat milchamtam yashuvu l'mitzrayim. Lepicha hesivam el derech lo avar bo ish. What would Ben Israel's thought have been at that point? We give up. Take us back to Egypt. Much better to go back to what we were used to than to perish in war in the desert. Had they been aware that they were being used as bait, they would never have agreed to it. So says the Sforno, Hashem took them a different road so that they would not be aware of it until it was too late. Derech Hamidbar Yam Suf, Shielchu Yam Suf Derech Hamidbar Ki Be'oto HaDerech Lo yavo megidim mitzrayim, v'lo yid'u beritifat paro ad shehigiyo otam. There are not so many travelers in this other route. Nobody will be able to locate Bnei Israel in the beginning. Nobody knows that they're there. And nobody will be able to tell them that the Egyptians are chasing after them ad shehisiko otam, until they're there. Ke'amru, v'yisu Bnei Israel et eneyem v'nei mitzrayim nosei achareihem. As the pasuk tells us, they lifted up their eyes and, oh my goodness, look at what they're seeing. Lo haya azlahem takana b'shubam. At that point, it was too late. They couldn't go back anymore. Ki lo yikablam paro v'chelo. They couldn't go back into Paro's advancing army. V'chamushim alu kol zeh hutzrak la'asof afal pishayu mezuyanim ki im kol klei ziyanam lo haya lahem omet lev lilacham b'mitzrayim lihimalet ki lo nisu be'ele. And even though they went up with weapons, they still were not prepared to fight. They didn't have the omitz lev, the necessary strength in their heart, the perseverance, the courage to fight against Egypt, because they had not been experienced. We're going to see this idea in an Ibn Ezra in a minute. The Meshech Chachma, source 24, comes up with yet another reason. It wasn't so much of a bait. It wasn't so much as not to let them know that they were being used as a bait. It wasn't so much not to force them into a war that they wouldn't have wanted to. It was really to delay their approach to Eretz Yisrael. They weren't ready to come to Har Sinai. They weren't ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. The lo nachem Elokim ki karovu b'mechilta karovu ha'davar shamar Kodesh Baruch Hu l'Moshe botziacha ha'am emitzrayim tavdun et Elokim al ha'har hazeh ki karovu. Karov haderech hashuv mitzrayim. You're going to come and worship Hashem on the Har, on Har Sinai, and it's really close to Egypt. It's only a 3-day journey. V'itachen ki hushrash levavam ta'uyot avodah zarah v'hevleihem u'musogeihem hazavim. The Bnei Israel at this point, and we just finished counting Sfirat HaOmer, and we see that idea in the Sfirat HaOmer a lot, that they were the lowest level of Tumah. They were still so involved, they were still so immersed in the Avodah Zarah, in the Hevel, in the nothingness of Mitzrayim. Lo pa'ala lehem hitgalut kvod Hashem v'mitzato asher hofia lehem pit'om l'shosha chadashim lakor melivavam kol ra. It would take 3 months in order to uproot all that they had been immersed in, to get ready, la'avod et Hashem al har hazeh. They couldn't go immediately from one to the other. They needed this transition time. And even this transition time, suggests the Meshech Chachma, wasn't quite enough. She'asu achadim mehem be'erev rab ha'egel, lo haya echad levad chor asher hitnaged aleihem u'micha bi'adam. Not so long after Har Sinai, barely a month and a half later, when Bnei Israel are getting ready to do the Egel HaZahav, clearly reflecting the influence of Egypt, no one stands up to counter it except for Hor. And it began with the Erev Rav, but we see many of the Bnei Israel involved as well. And even those that were not involved did not have the strength of spirit to say, oh, this is not a good idea, let's do something else. In spite of the lessons learned in Mitzrayim, in spite of the lessons learned al Sfat Hayam, they still were not ready for this total acceptance of Hashem Echad. Eretz mle'a kol pesel v'tavnit asher nifalu b'chol havodot zarot v'tolavotehem. Had Hashem brought them directly into the land of Israel without strengthening their internal belief, without strengthening their emunah, they would have fallen. The Eretz Hamori, as we are warned over and over again, has influences in the avodah zarah that we are told that we need to uproot. They needed a strength within them to be able to uproot it. And even with all the planning and training, when they get there, that's the story of Sefer Shoftim. They keep failing time and again. But at least now Hashem is giving them time before immersing them, thrusting them out of the kettle into the pot. That they wouldn't have taken away these false thoughts. Therefore Hashem took them in the desert, where he was the only one, where there was no other outside influence to detract, where they had a time to remove the Hevlei Mitzrayim, where they had a time to shake off all of their past and learn mi Hashem, and learn ma Hashem Doresh Mitanu, what Hashem is really asking for us. And then to go on to Eretz Yisrael, more sure of themselves. She'en etzel Yisrael shum shor shme'el mechar, that they would not have any more of these false gods within them. V'zeh she'amru ki karofu hadavar ta'abdunet elokim, v'lachen karof haderech lashuv v'mitrayim. So it's not just the physical journey to Egypt that Hashem was worried about, that it was too close. It was the emotional, it was the spiritual journey. They couldn't go to the next step while they were still so close and so immersed in all that Egypt had to order. And for this reason, and here maybe comes the clincher, he does delay them, not only by taking them Derech Yamsuf, not only by taking the longer route to Har Sinai, but how long is he actually going to delay their arrival until they get into Eretz Yisrael, says the Mishnah Chochmah? 40 years. That this was already part of Hashem's plot in order to make sure that we were able and strong when we went into the land of Israel. Now this should come a little bit as a surprise, because we always learned why were Bnei Israel in the desert for 40 years? It was a punishment for Chatam Raglim. But says the Mishnah Chochmah, on one level, it had nothing to do with Chatam Raglim. It had everything to do with who we are, where we were, and where we needed to go. We're going to see this idea elaborated upon in the Ibn Ezra, source number 25, where he talks about the psychological readiness that Bnei Israel needed to arrive at. He tips ru'u et yeshuat Hashem, ki atem lo tasu milchama. Look at what Hashem is going to do. You're not going to do war. Rak tiru et yeshuat Hashem asher yaseh lachem hayom. God is going to act for you. Yesh litmoa, says the Ibn Ezra. We have to ask. Ech nira machane gadol shel shesh ma'od elef ish meharodkim acharehem. We're talking about an army of 600,000 men. This is the army of Bnei Israel. There were 600,000 able-bodied men over the age of 20. Why were they so scared? Lama lo yolchamu al nafsham ba'al b'neihem? Why aren't they getting together and organizing themselves when they see the Egyptians pursuing them? Why are they standing around shaking and quivering, not sure what to do? Hatshuva, the answer, says Ibn Ezra, Kemitrim hayu adonim l'Israel, because Bnei Israel were used to looking at them as their masters. וזה הדור היוצא ממצרים למד מנעוריו לסבול עול מצרים ונפשו שפלה. From the moment they were born, the Egyptians were the all-powerful, the Egyptians were the almighty. If you cross the Egyptian, you're going to pay for it with a beating or with your life. They had no sense of spirit, they had no sense of self, they had no power psychologically to start fighting this enemy. איך יכול אתה להילחם עם אדוניו? How can they fight against these masters? היו ישראל נרפים ואינם מלומדים למלחמה. They were weak. They were weak in spirit. They were weak in the fact that they weren't practiced in war. הלא תראה כי עמלק בא בעמואה. Case in point at Ibn Ezra, when Amalek came with just a few men, לולי תפילות משה היה חולש את ישראל. Were not for the תפילות of Moshe, they would have been wiped out totally. Hashem nevado, shehu olse gedolot, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his imminence, v'lo nitkenu alilot, who knows all plans. Sibeb, he arranged it that they would go in a circuitous route, that they would circle around in the desert, shemetu kol ha'am hayotzei mimitzrayim hazharim, until these same men, who could not look an Egyptian in the face and fight against him, until they all died out. Ki en bahem koch lilachem b'knanim. Because the same lack of spirit to fight against the Egyptians would translate into anybody that they were going to fight against, whether they had been the Adon or not. Ad shekam dor acher dor hamibar. We needed that first generation to die out. We needed a new generation to come of age in a time of freedom, to come of age in a time where Hashem is taking care of them, giving them the spiritual strength, giving them the physical strength, giving them the psychological strength. Hashem is on our side. We can do whatever it takes as long as we listen to Dvar Hashem. Shalora ugalut vaitalahem nefesh kvoha. We needed this uplifted spirit in contrast to the nefesh shvela, the weakened and diminished spirit. Kasher hizkarti v'divrei Moshe beparshat ve'ela shmot. So Kriyat Yamsuf then becomes the beginning of our life together in the desert, as Hashem does miracle after miracle. Every time He forces us into a location where we look as if that's it, Hashem is there to provide for us. Al Hayav, He gives us military strength. The next stop, when there's no water, He provides us water. Soon after, when we run out of bread, He provides us bread. In Rephidim, again, when we're attacked by Amalek, He helps us with Amalek. When we run out of water, He again provides water. Keep in mind, the water that He gives us in Rephidim, really, the source is Har Horeb, Har Sinai. They get water from Har Sinai, and a couple days later, they get the Torah, Shem Shalat Kamayim, that's compared to water, at Har Sinai as well. So how do we connect it to what's going on today with the march up Fifth Avenue? And I was really at a loss about what to do. I wanted to give this year, and it seemed a little bit out of context. And lo and behold, I just found an interesting article from Rav Nathan Lopez Cardozo, believe it or not, comparing Kriyat Yamsuf, not to the parade, but to Hakamat Medina. So I thought that was close enough. He says that for something, for an event, to take on historic proportions, we need three different elements. It needs to be a root experience where we see Yad Hashem. It needs to be done in front of many, and it needs to have later generations having access to this vision. We see that with Kriyat Yamsuf. It was root experience. It helped to cement the Yitzhak Mitzrayim experience. It helped to lay the groundwork for the Har Sinai experience. It was certainly done by Rav Am. But most importantly, it becomes part of our consciousness. It worked its way into our tefillah. It worked its way into our Haggadah. We remember it, we talk about it. Sometimes what happens is we begin to take it for granted. We have to assume that the Bnei Israel took Kriyat Yamsuf for granted because of Egel HaZahav, because of all of the other events where they begin to lose this total faith in Hashem. Says Rabbi Cardoza, Hakamat Medina was a similar nes. It marked a point where Bnei Israel, the Jews who were in Europe during World War II, now had a place to go. It was a land that is going to be open to us whenever we need it. It happened in front of a multitude, and we do mark and make note of it. But I think what's happened also with our view of the state of Israel is after so many years of having it, we begin to take it for granted a little bit. We go there for visits, but there's a lot of complaints. It's not perfect, but it's what we have. And I think parades, such as the one that's going to take place today, help us reaffirm that pride that was held initially in 1948 as they were able to let Jews come into the land. It was our land. As Ben-Gurion stood up and, "Come, Medinat Yisrael, come, Medinat Yehudit." A parade like today with the veterans of 48, my father-in-law among them, leading off the parade helped remind us that it's not something we should take for granted. Thank you.